If you would please open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 37. Genesis chapter 37. We're going to be talking this morning primarily about Joseph and then do some review of the things that we've talked about so far. Genesis chapter 37. In our study of the book of Genesis, we were talking about the travels of Abraham, the travels of Isaac, and the travels of Jacob, and ultimately the travels of Joseph, as we discuss this period of Old Testament history. And in this particular segment of our Old Testament study, I want to talk with you a little bit about Joseph in Genesis chapter 37. I ask you to, before we concluded last time, to do some work on the chronology and the ages of Jacob when he came down into the land of Egypt brought there by Joseph. We'll talk about that some. If you've not done that, you may want to give a little bit of thought to that. If you're not prepared to do that, then we will do that another time. But I want to give that some consideration. But I want you to look in Genesis chapter 37, where we read of the beginning of the relationship between Joseph and his brothers, or at least as far as the biblical account is concerned. In Genesis chapter 37, we learn that Joseph was 17 years old, and the text describes him as a lad with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, verse 2, and his father's wives, and Joseph brought their evil report of them unto their father. And then in verse 3, we learn that Joseph is given a coat of many colors by his father, Jacob. David, tell me a little bit about what makes Joseph so special to Jacob, to Jacob. He does, and why? Terry? All right. And what made Rachel so special? He thought he was getting Rachel, and instead he got Leah. And, of course, that's a lesson in and of itself, as we've looked at the names of the children that Leah bore. But Joseph was special, and Jacob made a point of making that known. And these other brothers were quite envious of him. As we look at the dreams that he had, Randy, he had two dreams. Tell me about them, please, here in chapter 37. If you'd like. Yes. And as you read on, he had another dream. Verse 9, please, through verse 11. All right, the favoritism that Jacob has showed toward Joseph and then Joseph's dreams, this doesn't make for a good relationship. His brothers hate him. And what do they plan to do to him a bit later, we see, John? They plan to kill him. And I want you to notice especially their determination. Look at verse 20 or 19 and 20. It said, They said one to another, Behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him, and cast him into one of the pits, and we will say, An evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. They hate him. They want him gone, and they're determined to do what they can to eliminate Joseph and the problems that they have with him. Notice again the young age of Joseph. When Joseph was 17, he's then sent by his father down to Shechem, it is believed, where his brothers were feeding sheep. When he arrived, they were not there. They had gone farther than Shechem. Where were they? They were in Dothan. Notice again, if you will, the relationship of Shechem and Dothan. On a scale of miles, how far away would you say that is? Just a rough estimate. Pardon me? Good question. Oh, something in the neighborhood probably of, maybe 10 miles? Not all that far. And, of course, feeding sheep, that was what shepherds did. They go from place to place take care of the needs that they have. So he's traveled some distance to find them and then goes up to Dothan where he does find them. And then they plan on getting rid of him. Reuben is not so inclined to want to kill him. His idea is, let's put him in a pit. His idea was to come back later and rescue him. But instead, what happened to Joseph? David told me that you all have been studying this, and this was all good material and fair game. You want to tell me what was their plan to do with Joseph? Some traitors come along. And do what? Sell him. That's right. Throw him in the pit and sell him. Their idea is he won't make us any money if we kill him, so let's sell him. Verse 26 and 27. So that's their plan. Now, this Ishmaelite, Midianite group of folks, merchants, on their way to Egypt, buy him, and when they get to Egypt, what do they do with him? They sell him to Potiphar. Who's Potiphar? All right, Pharaoh's captain of his guard, as it were. Now, from what I understand, Potiphar's primary job was to be head of the executioners of those that the king ordered to be executed. So Potiphar's rank, if you please, brought him in close connection with the king. He's a very important man in Egypt. Terry? All right. Chapter 37, verse 10. All right. Well, he almost has to be referring to Leah in this context because Rachel's been dead for some time. As we have discussed this genealogy, or not the genealogy, but the timeline framework, it has a great effect on the question. It does indeed. If this is referring to Rachel, then, of course, you have... And this was the essence of the question that I asked in the class Wednesday night. If this has reference to Rachel, then Rachel is still alive at the time that Joseph is sold into Egypt, and therefore Benjamin has not yet been born. That would have to follow, which would also make it have to follow that if this is not Rachel, then this would be Leah, who is in essence raising these children. So that would make a great big difference about whether or not Benjamin has been born yet. Okay? And we were talking about that some, Linda and Richard and I, after services Wednesday night. I think that it's most likely that this is referencing Leah. Okay, John? Yeah. Either that or it's prophetic. Possible. I don't think it's all based on the 11 stars. I think when you get into the discussion of the counting of years, which gets complicated for me, but when we get into the counting of years, Linda, you presented a pretty good case for that in our discussion after class Wednesday night of how old that Jacob was, or Isaac was, when Isaac died. And whether or not Joseph would have known and known well his grandfather, which when you calculate the number of years, it would appear that Joseph did, and that Joseph's brother Benjamin had already been born. When you draw that out, I should have prepared a chart on that so I could see it and present it to everyone. But the calculation of the number of years, I think, indicates that Benjamin had... was probably in the neighborhood of 10, 11, most scholars believe, years old at the time that Joseph was sold into Egypt. Okay? There's some speculation that goes into all of that, but I think that's the most likely conclusion. Okay? Lynn? Yes. Yeah. 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 It would just, I'm sorry, I can't see. It'd make the probability so that he would likely have been born at that time. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions or comments on that? That's challenging, isn't it, for your thinking? It is for mine when I start tallying up numbers and trying to make such determinations. Randy? Yeah. Oh, yes. Everybody's related at this point. Yeah. Yeah. Jacob's son. Half brother, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, through Hagar. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, they're all relatives. And of course, the relationship of the Ishmaelites and the Midianites, you've got one that's a larger and one's a smaller group. What did we say? Jacob? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, through Hagar. Yeah. Okay. All right, we'll get it nailed down. Wind up being your own grandpa. Okay. All right. Well, the brothers then deceived Jacob, making him think, this is where we left off in our study Wednesday night, making him think that Joseph had been killed by a wild animal. A very valid point I want us to remember in our study is once you have believed something that's not so, and you've believed it for a long time, it's real easy then to disregard the truth or consider the truth a lie. Joseph was not dead, as it had been supposed. And these brothers had not told Jacob that Joseph was dead, but they led him to come to that conclusion. They knew that Joseph was very much alive, but when Joseph's coat of many colors was seen by his father, he came to the conclusion that he's been killed by a wild beast. Knowing better, they didn't tell their father any different. And so he went for a long time, 22 years, believing that Joseph was dead. And then when Joseph sent word that he was alive and for Jacob to come down to Egypt, Jacob said, no, it can't be so, until he saw the wagons and the preparations and so forth that Joseph had made for his transportation in chapter 45. And then he believed that it was so. I want us to observe that as we pass. These merchants sold Joseph then to Potiphar in Genesis chapter 39. We've talked about that, talked about who he was, the role that he had. There was to be an article in the bulletin today that the preacher didn't feel comfortable with as far as having it worded just exactly like he wanted it. So it's on the back burner, but I'm going to divulge it to you anyway. The point being, in Genesis chapter 39, you'll note that when Joseph has been tempted by Potiphar's wife numerous times over a number of years, by the way, how long about so was Joseph in Potiphar's house before he went to prison? I don't know exactly when Potiphar's wife decided that she wanted Joseph. But how old was Joseph when he was sold into Egypt? How old was he when he appeared before Pharaoh? Pardon me? He was 30. All right. In the interim period of time, we've got him in prison for a part of that time, and a part of that time, of course, in Potiphar's house. What's the interim time between being sold into Egypt in Potiphar's house and then going to Pharaoh's house? 13 years. So we've got a lengthy period of time accounting here for the period and the 2 years. I don't know, Terry, that you may have been thinking about the 2 years that Joseph remained in prison after he had interpreted the butler's dreams. But we've got a split period of time here of imprisonment and Potiphar's house that amounts to about 13 years. Potiphar's wife, of course, tries to seduce Joseph. And you'll note, beginning in verse 7 of chapter 39, that he was evidently, or this was repeated, it says in verse 10, day by day. We're not talking about a one-time occurrence in the life of Joseph and his relationship with Potiphar's wife. But three things Joseph mentions specifically that cause him to not commit this act with her. What were the three things? Look, if you will, beginning at verse 7, when she says, "Lie with me." Then in verse 8, he refused, and he said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master knoweth not what is with me in the house, and he hath put all that he hath into my hand. He is not greater in this house than I. Neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" What are the three reasons Joseph cites why he will not do this? Number one, my responsibility. It's a matter of honor. I have been given a position of honor by the master of this house, Potiphar, and I'll not betray his trust. Number two, you're his wife. That's right. So we learn that Joseph has been taught something about the sanctity of marriage. You're his wife. Number three, it's sin against God. I cannot do this. And so the text then tells us that he fled and got him out. So this is the relationship between Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Potiphar's wife, who had obviously portrayed a love and affection for Joseph, now what's her attitude toward Joseph? Kill him. She doesn't like Joseph much, does she? All right. So she lies about him. She tells that this was Joseph's advances, and look, he left his coat, and my master, of course, she has not the honor for her husband, Potiphar, obviously, that Joseph does. She said, "He has brought this Hebrew among us to mock us." And so she reports to the other servants, and she reports to her husband in a very critical way, obviously. Now, you might read into this that Potiphar, being the captain of the guard, as some have suggested, the captain of the executioners, what would you do if you had that power and authority and somebody told you about someone in your house that had treated your wife this way? Off with his head. But Potiphar doesn't do that. He has him imprisoned in the king's prison. Now, that in itself is a very serious thing, but he doesn't off with his head, so to speak. David? Yes. Yes. Oh, yes. Perhaps not. Perhaps not. Joseph. John? That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. And this tells us, I think, more than implied, when you look at the chapter 39, that Potiphar's relationship with Joseph appears to be a good one, because Joseph is paid, he prospers in Potiphar's house, and Potiphar recognizes that God is with him, you'll see that in verse 3, and that everything Joseph puts his hand to does well. And so Potiphar has no qualms against Joseph until now. Okay? All right. He does well in prison. Yes, let's look at chapter 40. In chapter 40, God continues to be with Joseph. Look, if you will, at verse 21 of chapter 39 beginning. It says, "But Jehovah was with Joseph, and he showed kindness unto him, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison." Now I want you to observe one thing that's common between Potiphar's house and the keeper of the prison. In both of these instances, Potiphar, as far as the affairs of his house, who ran it? Joseph did. As far as the affairs of the prison, who ran it? Joseph did. Verse 23. It tells us. I'm sorry, verse 22. "The keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was in his hand." Joseph was over it. Now, when you have Joseph ultimately promoted in Egypt to provide for the 7 years of famine, I know that Pharaoh was the king, but who's running the country? Joseph is. Again, there's a lesson in that, Richard, about the fact that God was with him. You know, we sometimes pray, and I don't want to make light of the expression. Sometimes we use expressions over and over to the extent sometimes they lose meaning or lose significance, and we need to be reminded of what they do mean. We ask God to be with us, or be with someone when they're sick, be with someone when they're traveling, be with someone when they're enduring great difficulties or trials in their life. That's significant. When God was with Joseph, he blessed him in everything that he put his hand into, even in adverse circumstances. God was with him, and that's a real biggie. We need to see it so. Well, we need to understand what it means for God to be with someone, as in this particular instance. Yes? Providence. Okay, that's right. And there's an ultimate end to that, that Joseph points out to his brothers when we get over to about chapter 45, and we're going to see that. But this famine, 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. I was studying with someone this week, and we were looking at the map and noting the relationship of Egypt to the land of Canaan. We know that it was about 200 miles. We've discussed that already when we talked about Abraham traveling from, was it Beersheba, over to Egypt, and then the relationship between Pharaoh and Sarah resulting in Abraham traveling back about 200 miles. But my point is this. This famine was widespread. It was not something that just affected Egypt. When you look at what Joseph has told Pharaoh, this famine is going to smite a whole lot of country. But before we talk about that, I failed to talk about the butler and the baker. I put that on here just so I wouldn't forget it, and I passed over it. The butler and the baker. I sometimes have to be careful when I tell about the butler and the baker so that I don't get them confused. Ken, tell me about the butler. Who is the butler? All right. All right. And both dreams did indeed come true. Now, when the butler was restored in these 3 days, Joseph asked one thing. What was it? Be remembered. That's right. That you remember me. And how much time passed between the time that the butler was restored and the time that he finally remembered Joseph? 2 years, I believe it was. Check me on that, but I believe it was 2 years. Well, that's in the paragraph beginning at verse 16. Two full years. Okay, thank you. So when he went back to Pharaoh, he forgot all about Joseph. And then Pharaoh had dreams. The dreams of Pharaoh. John, tell me the first one. Oh, well, the first one was about the cows. All right. Juan, you want to tell me about the second dream? Grain. 7 ears of grain and seven... Okay, and the same thing. You've got seven fat ears or full ears of grain and seven skinny ears, and the seven skinny ears ate up the seven fat ears and they grew no larger. Now that would perplex you, wouldn't it? And Pharaoh did not know what the dream meant. And it's at this point that Joseph is called out of prison because the baker now remembers this man that can interpret dreams. And when Joseph came to Pharaoh, what did he tell him the dreams meant? Chris? Donna? Famine. All right, 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of lean or famine. And then what does Pharaoh determine that Joseph would make the good fellow for? Take care of all that. Look, if you will, at verse 37 of chapter 41. Chapter 41. Verse 37 says, "And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and all the eyes of the servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, Can we find such a one as this, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, Forasmuch as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou." Look at verse 40 now. "Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, See, I set thee over all the land of Egypt." And he, of course, gave him his ring and dressed him all up and made him look like an important fellow, which he was. Now, during this 7 years of plenty, what was Joseph's job? Store up grain. I'm told that archaeologists have found great underground bins that they believe might very well serve the purpose of grain bins that date back to this era and may have been, there's the possibility at least, those that were used during this period of time. I don't know, but it would be like some that were used during this period of time, which documents that Egypt produced and stored grain not only for their use, but for the use of those round about them. In other words, it was used commercially. Now, we mentioned this famine was widespread. It didn't just affect Egypt. When the famine came, lasting now 7 years, as Joseph has has told them, it doesn't take very long till you've got to have something to eat. Where's grain? In Egypt. What does that tell us that all of these surrounding countries are doing? They're going to Egypt to buy grain. We're familiar, are we not, with the law of supply and demand? If Egypt is the only one that has any food to eat, what are you willing to give for it, Richard? Whatever it takes. What do you think is going to happen to the price of grain? What's that going to do to Egypt? We're going to have a very wealthy nation. They have a product everybody wants. The price becomes inflated. Egypt becomes wealthy. Very wealthy. And Joseph is responsible for that. But moreover, the land of Canaan is also smitten. What happens to Joseph's family up in Egypt? Up in Canaan. They too have to come to Egypt, don't they, to buy grain, because that's the only place that it is. In Genesis chapter 42, look at your Bibles. Genesis chapter 42, beginning at verse 1, it said, "Now Joseph saw that there was grain." I quit that. "Now Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, and Jacob said unto his sons, why do ye look one upon another? And he said, behold, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Get you down thither and buy for us from thence, that we may live and not die." You know, when we look at a passage like this, why do you look one upon another? That's an interesting question, isn't it? It's very apparent to Jacob, something's got to be done. There's grain in Egypt. Why stand there gawking? Go buy it. And so they load up to go and buy it. Look at verse 3. It says, "And Joseph's brethren went down to buy grain in Egypt, but Benjamin, Joseph's brother, Jacob sent not with his brethren, for he said, lest peradventure harm befall him. And his sons, or the sons of Israel, came to buy among those that came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan." In verse 6, "And Joseph was the governor over the land. He it was that sold to all the peoples of the land, and Joseph's brethren came and bowed down themselves with him with their faces to the earth." Genesis chapter 37, verses 5 through 10. Would you take a gander at that and tell me what's there, please? 5 through 10. What did he dream? And his brothers didn't much like that, did they? No, they didn't like that. But now what are they in fact doing? Bowing down, just like he said that they would. How long before? About 22 years before. Now, being as Joseph is younger, he was 17 at the time that all of this was taking place. He was being sold into Egypt. We know that the other brothers were somewhat or considerably older than he was. One of the things, Bruce, that we often see changes is from the age of 17 until 30-something, 37, because we're now into the years of the famine, at least the years of plenty have passed. So we know that Joseph is not 17. He's at least 37 at this point. What happens to a fellow from the age of 17 to 37? Oh, everything changes. Your appearance changes. I dare say that if we dug out some old pictures of Bruce that were about 20 some years older, Reba might tell us that he doesn't really look exactly the same. Especially if we go from about 17 until about 37. A lot of changes happen in the fellow's appearance during that time. Joseph's brothers don't recognize him. But being as he's younger and they were older, he does recognize them. Significant time has passed, and time changes all of us, especially in appearance, and especially when you consider that Joseph was a 17-year-old boy, and now he's second in command of all of Egypt. He went to see about his brothers who were shepherds, and now he's dressed in all the formality of being a king. Would you expect your brother to be him? Or look like that? Pardon me? Not if you supposed that he was dead. No. No. And so here's Joseph, and they're bowing before him just exactly like he said that they would. Now, get the picture. Very important to our study. In Genesis chapter 42, as they bow before him, just as he had dreamed of them previously, he now accuses them of coming to spy out the land. And of course, they begin to back up. They said, no, we're true men. Look at verse 11, chapter 42. We are true men. Thy servants are no spies. And he said unto them, nay, but to see the nakedness of the land, ye are come. And they said, we, thy servants, are 12 brethren, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not. What have they just told him? All right, they think that he's dead. That's right. Secondly, they've told him about Benjamin. Now, Joseph's knowledge, and this was one of the points of the discussion of the question, his knowledge of Benjamin. 20 years have passed. 22, we'll see in just a little bit. And he's not seen Benjamin. Hadn't heard anything about Benjamin. And now they tell him about Benjamin. There's a young man at home. The old man lives. He wants to know, are they well? Look at verse 13. And behold, the youngest, verse 14, and Joseph said unto them, this is it that I spake unto you, saying, ye are spies. We're going to get to the rest of that in just a little bit. But, just to throw a little fear into them, he wants to know about this young man. And he said, you go home. You feed your families. You take care of them. But you can't come back down here anymore until I know that what you've told me is so. So, if you're coming back, you bring Benjamin. But just for insurance, I'm going to keep one of you. Who's kept? Simeon. Simeon now is in prison in Egypt. They go back with their grain and their goods, and when they get back home, what do they find that has been done? Where's their money? It's in their sacks. How does that represent them to be? Thieves. All right. So we've come down into Egypt. We've been accused by second in command of all of Egypt of being spies. We've taken the grain that we came for and we didn't pay for it. We've told him that we have a family back up here in the land of Canaan, and he keeps one of us in prison demanding that our baby brother come next time if we come back for more grain. Now, does Joseph know they'll be back? How does he know that? Pardon me? He's got Simeon, well, that's right, but he's also got food. And he knows how long this is going to last. Yes, they'll be back. What they bought won't last. They'll be back. Now, it's going to get real complicated when they decide to come back. They eat up all their food. Yes. 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 That's right. And Joseph eventually tells them this is only the second year. There's 5 more years of this. If that gives us any indication of how quickly this famine has eaten everything up. There's nothing to eat. It's all gone. Okay? So, how long their provisions lasted, you can speculate on that, how long they bought. But we know that they're 2 years deep into this famine, and there's 5 years yet to go. Now, when they find their money in their sacks, verse 35 tells us that they were afraid. In verse 36, Jacob their father said unto them, chapter 42 now, me have ye bereaved of my children, Joseph is not, and Simeon is not, and ye will take Benjamin away? You see, if I'm going to have to send you back and send Benjamin, I'm losing all my family, those that are special. Now, this is not going to work out so well, is it? Now, we say those that are special. That sounds strange in our ears, I know, but Jacob had his special. And so it was. In verse 37, Reuben says, if I don't bring him back, you kill my two sons. Now that's a real deal, isn't it? If I don't bring him back, you kill your grandsons. Well, that's not feasible. Chapter 43, Judah, chapter 43, verse 6. Jacob is upset with his sons because he perceives that you told this man in Pharaoh about the rest of us. And if you had just kept your mouth shut, we wouldn't be in this problem. Look at verse 6. Israel said, or Jacob as it were, wherefore dealt ye so ill with me as to tell the man, whether ye had yet a brother? And they said, the man asked straitly concerning ourselves and concerning our kindred, saying, is your father yet alive? Have ye another brother? Now, the very asking of that question, Terry, kind of prompts the question of whether Joseph knew that he had another brother. And thus the discussion that we introduced in our Wednesday night class. But the point is, Jacob says, if you'd kept your mouth shut, we wouldn't be in this mess. And they said, well, he asked us straight out. So we had to answer. And there it is. And then in chapter 43, we note that in order to go back to Egypt, they take gifts. What are they trying to do? Much like the same thing that Jacob did with Esau. Yes. Perhaps. Well, in accusing these boys of being spies, in their defense, they've said, we're the sons of this old man up in Canaan. So I suppose he wants to know how he's doing. We'll see that question asked a little bit later, not just yet, but on this second return. But these gifts are sent. And, of course, Benjamin rose up in verse 15, and goes with them, and they stand before Joseph. In verse 16 of Genesis chapter 43, it says, when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said unto the steward of his house, bring the men into the house, and slay and make ready, for the men shall dine with me at noon. And the man did as Joseph bade, and the man brought the men to Joseph's house. Now, we've got another problem brewing. What's the problem? Joseph comes in, he's made all these preparations, and he sees Benjamin. Does he know who Benjamin is? Okay, how you know that? He's the youngest one of the brothers. We see evidence, emotional evidence, on behalf of Joseph. The text tells us that his heart yearned over his brother. In verse 30, when he saw him, and in the latter part of verse 30, he sought a place to cry. Your emotions ever get the best of you? You try to hold it to where you can get to a place to cry. And that's what Joseph did. He wept. Now, when he gets himself together, he washes himself, the text tells us, and then he comes and makes the preparations for the eating to take place. Now, when he sends food over to the table where his brothers are, now I want you to picture this scene. Egyptians don't eat with other folks. And so the Egyptians have their table up here, and the other folks, his family, they're over here. And he sends the food over to their table. But with Benjamin, how much food does Benjamin get? 5 times as much food. You'll see that in verse 34. Well, now, does that suggest something to you? All right, the meal takes place. They've got their grain. They're on their way back. Joseph gives instructions to his servant, the man who's filling their bill of groceries, put their money back in their sacks. Now, wait a minute. The money that they had brought for the first trip, where's it? It's still with them. They say to Joseph, when we got home, we found our money from the first trip, and we brought the money back. We want you to know we didn't steal that first batch of grain. So we brought that back. Plus, we brought money to buy more grain. Now, where's all that money? It's all in the mouth of their sack. For two batches of grain in the mouth of their sacks. And Joseph orders that his own drinking vessel, his own silver cup, be put in the mouth of Benjamin's sack. Now, when they get down the road a ways, Joseph says, "Go get them. Go get them." So they start going through the sacks when they catch up, and these brothers think everything's fine, well and good. They think they paid for that first batch of grain. They think they paid for the second batch of grain. And when the servants start going through the sacks, what do they find? Money, money, and more money, and the silver cup. And whose sack is it in? You talk about trouble. What would you think if you were one of those brothers? Perhaps Reuben. Perhaps Judah. Yeah, everything's good. Everything is not good. When you get into the 44th chapter, the 44th chapter, when it becomes apparent what has taken place and the trouble that it appears Benjamin is in, what does Judah propose? "Take me. Please don't take Benjamin." Now, you talk about being caught with your hand in the cookie jar. That's evident, isn't it? Here's all the money. Here's the silver cup. Judah says, "Take me. Let Benjamin go home." In chapter 45, you're going to do that to me, aren't you? Oh, man. Chapter 45, verse 3. "And Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live?" And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. Would you be? Okay. We'll start there next time. Wednesday night, be back. We're going to be talking about the remainder of the book of Genesis. Be sure you have your questions done for next time. And by the way, if you've not been coming to this class on Wednesday night, you don't want to miss this part. Please come Wednesday night, Genesis chapter 45 through chapter 50.